Good evening, everyone. Good to see you all out there. Just scanning the screen, I'm seeing people from different parts of the country and the province and the world, which is great to see. I hope that wherever you are, you've been able to get outdoors today. It was another beautiful day here. So this is the third week of our Dharma seminar based on this book by our teacher, Norman Fisher, called Training in Compassion, Zen Teachings on the Practice of Lojong. For those of you who might be new to this theme, the book is based on a set of practices from Tibetan Buddhism called Lojong. And these practices are organized as what's called the 7-point mind training, consisting of 59 slogans or short, pithy phrases that focus on an aspect of practice. These are practices that help us cultivate a mind that is resilient and spacious, and able to respond to the suffering both in ourselves and in the world around us, to respond with wisdom and compassion and skillful means. So last week, Michael talked about the first part of the second point. Remember I said 7 points. So part two, we're still in point two, but the second part of point two. In the original text, I don't think these points have titles, but Norman in his book gives them titles. I think his version is based on Chogyam Trungpa's version. And the title that Norman gives point two is Training in Empathy and Compassion. And another wording for that is training in bodhicitta. Bodhi meaning awakening and citta meaning mind. And bodhicitta, we could say, is the aspiration to awaken not only for personal benefit, but for the benefit of others, for the benefit of all beings. So bodhicitta is what sets us on the path, on the bodhisattva path. It's that motivation. And point two of the 7-point mind training gives us two complementary bodhicitta practices, absolute and relative bodhicitta. And last week, Michael talked about absolute bodhicitta. Absolute bodhicitta is that mind, that boundless mind of interconnection with all things. The mind that doesn't get snagged on the ever-changing circumstances of our lives. The mind that sees deeply into impermanence and into no separate self. And from this deep insight is born both wisdom and compassion. And the freedom to live and actualize our practice in our everyday lives. And then we need relative bodhicitta. But relative bodhicitta is the capacity to respond right here and now to a particular situation, a particular being that's right in front of us that we're faced with. Relative bodhicitta is where the rubber hits the road. In our practice, it's the gritty reality of life on Earth in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, where we find ourselves. So I'm going to take the slogans of relative bodhicitta a little bit out of order. Some of you may have found these. There's a PDF of these slogans on our website, under the posting for the, under events, there's a posting for this Dharma seminar, and you can find that a PDF there of these slogans if you want to review, or if you want to print it out and take notes, just know that you can find it there. So I'm taking them a little bit out of order. I'm going to take number 9. I'm going to talk about number 9 first. And Norman calls this one, turn things around. The traditional wording is, three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. A set of three threes. Three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. So three objects actually refers not to objects, but the way we perceive the objects of our attention. So these might be things in our sensory environment, but they also might be things in our mind, a memory, an imagining, a worry. These are the objects of our awareness, right? Or it might be a sound, or a smell, or a taste. And the ways we react to these objects are typically pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. From our earliest cellular history, or ancestry, our earliest ancestry, we are hardwired to approach what's attractive, what we perceive will meet our needs and wants, to avoid what we perceive as harmful, and to be indifferent to what we perceive as irrelevant to our needs and wants, right? Pretty much boils down to those three possibilities. And these three objects or three reactions correspond to the three poisons, what are known as the three poisons. I'm sure you've heard of in Buddhist thought, greed, hatred, or aversion, and ignorance. Which, if we pay attention, we soon will realize how these three poisons do poison or contaminate our lives, cause us a lot of suffering. We're always not getting what we want, or losing what we have, or losing it when we have it, what we want, or getting what we don't want. We're always getting pushed and pulled between grasping and avoiding. As Dogen says, in attachment, flowers fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. Whether we like it or not, we lose what we are attached to, and the weeds spread. We can never keep up with them all. And yet, these very experiences of flowers falling and weeds spreading, despite our wishes for it to be otherwise, for life to be otherwise, these very experiences are Dharma gates, opportunities for us to let go of self-clinging and turn things around. So greed, when self-clinging falls away, turns into compassion, into caring. Aversion, when self-clinging falls away, turns into wisdom, or what's called discriminating wisdom, clear-seeing wisdom. And ignorance, when self-clinging falls away, is transformed into equanimity. So these transform qualities are called the three seeds of virtue. So that's the third set of three. So we can use this slogan as a reminder. When those old reactive habit patterns kick in, as they do repeatedly, turn things around. It's not that it's inherently, there's anything inherently wrong with our tendency to, you know, those very primitive reactions of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. It's when those become entrenched habit patterns that distort our perception of what's happening right now, that they become problematic. And that's where our attention to right now can help us turn it around, give us that freedom. So the seventh and eighth slogans offer us a practice to aid in these transformations of the three poisons, the turning it around. The seventh and eighth slogans basically describe the core practice of relative bodhicitta in Tibetan Buddhism, which is Tonglen. Tonglen literally means sending and receiving. In a nutshell, the practice consists of breathing in suffering and imagining it as darkness, heat, almost smoky, constriction, it's almost a claustrophobic feeling. Breathing that in and breathing out light, ease, coolness, healing, compassion. We can do this for ourselves, for others, and for all beings. It's sounds simple, but it's also counterintuitive, different from many typical healing meditations that you might have encountered, in which we're encouraged to breathe in healing and breathe out toxicity, pain, and suffering. That's what we want to get rid of, right? Why would we want to breathe that in? But Tonglen is different. It's sometimes called exchanging self for other. And that can sound like a daunting thing to do. But so I'm going to give you some guidance about how to practice Tonglen. But first, with a caveat, Norman mentions in his book that Zen has a tendency to be anti-technique. Zen students sometimes have a strong resistance to these heart practices from other traditions, like loving-kindness, metta practice from the Theravadan tradition, and Tonglen from the Tibetan tradition. We have Zazen, right? That should be enough. And of course, compassion is implicit in our Zazen practice. Everything is included in just sitting. True enough. But we have to be careful that Zazen doesn't become a way of avoiding facing suffering. That it doesn't just reinforce a kind of self-focused striving. And sometimes, even with our best intent, facing suffering can be overwhelming. So maybe sometimes we can benefit from these practices aren't typically practiced in traditional Zen. What we can do, though, is practice them with a Zen sensibility. What I mean by that is non-striving, not expecting ourselves to be perfect bodhisattvas and berating ourselves when we fail, which we will do. We will, believe me. But rather paying attention to our moment-to-moment experience as we do these practices of the heart. Noticing, is my heart contracted? Is my heart open? How do I feel when I do each step of this practice? And when we apply patience and persistence over time, these practices really do reveal their strength and their depth. So, slogan number 7 is practice sending and receiving alternately on the breath. So that's the basic Lojong practice. And slogan 8 is begin sending and receiving practice with yourself. That doesn't give us too much to go on. So I have found the teachings of Pema Chodron, the American teacher of Tibetan Buddhism, to be the most helpful in learning how to do Tonglen practice on my own. But then I also, some years ago, went out and found two different Tibetan retreat situations where I could go more deeply with a Tibetan teacher of Tibetan Buddhism and learn Tonglen practice. And that really helped too. It's important. And I was going to show you, if you want to look up Pema Chodron, this one, Start Where You Are. This is her commentary on the Lojong teachings. That's a good one. And then specifically, this little book, Tonglen, by Pema Chodron, is another one that's very, very helpful if you want to go more deeply than we can tonight into Tonglen practice. All the Tonglen teachings say that it's really important to ground your Tonglen practice in basic awareness of body and breath and mind, to allow the mind to settle before starting the Tonglen practice. If your mind's too agitated, it's very difficult to do. So in Tibetan practice, that would be called shamatha. It's very similar to our zazen practice. And I really like what the teacher of Tibetan Buddhism, who I did a retreat with, Alan Wallace, what he has to say about shamatha, or we could substitute zazen. The whole point of shamatha or zazen is to make your mind serviceable. This means, and I love that word, serviceable, because it's serviceable on the bodhisattva path, of course. This means that however you wish to put your mind to service, it is now fit for the purpose. Whether it's for teaching, for meditation, for composing music, whatever you need to do, you now have a mind that is really functioning well. The dysfunctional mind is heavy, stiff, rigid, dark, and prone to grouchiness. Whatever virtue you wish to cultivate, the mind balks. The serviceable mind, in contrast, is buoyant, light, stable, and clear, and ready to devote itself to the cultivation of wholesome qualities. Isn't that a great description? So the serviceable mind is the mind of the bodhisattva, poised, open, ready to respond, ready to meet each moment in the world just as it is. So this is the mind that we need to cultivate to approach this practice of Tonglen. Pema Chodron teaches Tonglen in four stages, and I'd like to guide you very briefly and simply through these four stages to give you just a little introduction. Some of you may already be familiar with this practice, but for those who aren't, this will just give you a little bit of an introduction. So I'd like you for this to take your zazen posture. It's really important to take a comfortable seat, not to be in pain when you're doing this. So make yourselves comfortable, but make sure you have good posture so that your chest is open so you can breathe really freely, because this is very much a breath-based practice. The very first step, Pema Chodron calls flashing absolute bodhicitta. Flashing because it's just brief, just for a few seconds. Just opening your mind to a sense of boundlessness. That big sky mind that Michael talked about last week. So just take a few seconds right now to open to this boundless sense of connection without limit, spaciousness. And I'd probably encourage you to do this practice with eyes closed, a little different from your zazen. The next step is to establish the rhythm of the breath. Breathing in with a sense of darkness, breathing in darkness, heat, heaviness, constriction. And on the out-breath, sending out light, coolness, ease, peace, healing, compassion. So do this, just practice breathing with that imagery, that sensory feeling of texture, And make sure to synchronize your breath with those qualities, breathing in and then out, and making sure that the breath is even and the in-breath and out-breath are equal. Notice if there's a difference and see if you can adjust so that the in-breath and out-breath are regular and equal. It might help to imagine breathing in and out not only through your nose, but through all the pores of your body, because we do. We breathe with our whole body. Imagine breathing like a tree breathes. Because, of course, trees take in toxins and purify them for us. So we can do that, too, in this practice. So just sit another minute and practice the breathing. Okay, the next stage in the Tonglen practice is to start where you are, as Pema Chodron says in her title. Start where you are. Bring up a situation that is very personal and real to you right now. It might be someone you really care about who is suffering, or it might be some way you yourself are suffering. Just see what arises in your mind. That's very present. And then on the in-breath, you take in that suffering using the imagery you've just been practicing. The darkness, the heaviness, the density. Take it right in and transform it. And out again as healing, light, compassion, sending out healing and light. When you're doing this for someone else, particularly if they are ill, physically or mentally, it's very important to realize that you are not actually taking on their illness and making it your own. You are opening to their suffering. You're taking on their suffering, not the illness, and transforming it in your heart to compassion. So you cannot be harmed by this practice. You're awakening the compassion in your own heart. And when you're doing this practice for yourself, if what arises is your own suffering, your own pain, as you do it, as you breathe in that pain, that suffering, imagine right now all the other people who are suffering in the same or a very similar way. If it's fear, all those other people who are fearful in the way that you are. This is a powerful practice. It opens up that contraction of self-clinging. So you breathe in your own suffering along with others. In solidarity with others, in connection with others, and transforming it, breathing out from the heart of compassion into light, ease, healing. We like to think that our suffering is unique, and of course, we are unique human beings. But there really are a limited number of common themes in human life. And when we really realize how many others suffer from loneliness, grief, longing for love, resentment, bitterness, not so very different from our own, our hearts open. And we can be more compassionate towards ourselves and towards others. So please continue this practice for a few minutes on your own. Get the feeling of it, just exploring what it's like. And if it feels right, if a different person or situation presents itself, you can let go of the first one and shift your focus to another. This is a very intuitive practice. Now the fourth stage is to open your heart to include those who are beyond your immediate sphere of concern. It's quite natural at times for the third stage to open in this way into the fourth stage. For example, if I were doing Tonglen for my elderly mother, it might just naturally expand to include other elderly mothers throughout the world, other daughters concerned for their mothers. You might expand to include the forests, the birds, or the great earth herself, all beings. So just take a few minutes more to allow your focus to expand and see where it takes you. Continuing to breathe in suffering, darkness, heaviness, breathing out healing, light, peace, using whatever images work for you. Keeping your breaths regulated and even. So thank you for trying that with me. I realize that it was just a very, very short little introduction, but I I hope that it gives you some sense of the potential of Tonglen practice. It's something that you can include in your daily practice for part of your sitting time. Usually it's good to kind of designate a certain part of your practice and decide ahead of time that you'll do that. And please don't feel discouraged if you find it challenging. It is. It can be quite challenging. But the wonderful thing about Tonglen practice is that we can apply it then to the very obstacles that arise as we do it. Let me just give you a little bit of Pema Chodron's wise advice. She says, when you start to have difficulty in doing the practice, you can always shift your focus and begin doing Tonglen for the obstacle you are feeling, with the simultaneous recognition that other people are experiencing the same sort of obstacle. For example, you may start to do Tonglen for a particular person with a wholehearted intention to help them, but suddenly it becomes complicated. There are many possible scenarios. Perhaps you become afraid of taking in more pain than you can handle. Perhaps you are overwhelmed with sadness or grief. Perhaps you have an emotionally ambiguous relationship with the other person, such as a parent or spouse. You are actually very resentful toward the very person you wanted to help. Can you imagine that happening? Or perhaps you feel like a failure. You feel completely poverty-stricken that you have nothing to offer others. In any case, you feel that you can't continue that practice because it evokes emotions that seem negative, inappropriate, or overpowering. At that point, you should not think your Tonglen is a failure. On the contrary, you have successfully contacted a tender and alive issue that you can work with. At this point, you shift the object of your attention. Breathe in and completely acknowledge what seems to be an obstacle. Your fear, your sadness, your irritation, your sense of failure. You feel its heaviness and your tendency to shut down around it. Then you open your heart to your own shutdown feelings. When you breathe in, you let go of the words and the storyline. At the beginning, the storyline puts you in touch with the naked energy of the emotions. This energy is a palpable quality in your body and has nothing to do with the words. So you drop the storyline and go directly into the energy through working with the in and out breath. So when you do this practice over a span of time, you know, particularly in a retreat session setting, when you're held, you know, in that space of retreat or sesshin, you can go quite deeply into this practice. Or you can also use it in your everyday life. We can do on the spot Tonglen. I call it street Tonglen, in our workplace, walking along the sidewalk, or riding on transit, just noticing how our heart opens or contracts as we encounter the people around us, people and situations around us, similar to practicing what I call street metta. We can just pause and in a few breaths take in the suffering, theirs, ours, and breathe out ease, compassion. If you know the practices of the Brahma-Viharas, loving kindness and compassion practices, you can add words. You can combine words from those practices. May my heart be at ease. May your heart be at ease. May I be free from fear. May you be free from fear. So you can be creative with these practices. And with these practices, we really can turn things around. We can transform craving into compassion, aversion into clear-eyed wisdom, ignorance into equanimity. Not only in our meditation practice, but in our everyday lives, right in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, or whatever most challenging situation we may be facing. So typically, at the end of a Tonglen, a practice session, we dedicate the merit of our practice. So I would like to close with this dedication of merit from Pema Chodron. All the virtue I have accomplished, All the virtue we have accomplished until this moment, and whatever we may accomplish in the future, we dedicate to the welfare of all sentient beings. Like a drop of water put into the ocean, may it never diminish. May sickness, war, famine, and needless suffering decrease. May wisdom, love, and compassion increase for ourselves and others, now and in the future. So thank you, everyone. We're now going to do our Zoom magic and divide you into groups and ask you each to take maybe just a couple minutes each. We'll see, how many people do we have now? Well, there's two pages. Michael's going to help me calculate. What I'll just ask you each to do is spend a couple of minutes each just sharing what ways you feel you could apply this practice in your daily life.
Groups of three.
Okay, we're going to do groups of three, so we're going to pop you into groups of three. Please introduce yourselves, and you'll have to self-time. We'll give you about 10 minutes total, and we'll give you a one-minute warning when it, and before we bring you back. Okay. So here goes. Okay, I'm just going to add that we hold what's said with respect, and that we don't talk about it outside the Zoom Zendo. Oh, you know, we've got at least one group where there's two people in one, like Stephanie and Alfredo. I don't think we can do much about that with Zoom. So if one group ends up with four, just do your best. Does that last one have only two? Oh, I didn't unmute. Oh, Diane. I meant to unmute Diane. She might not be able to do it herself.
Let me just see who's left here.
Yeah. Oh, see Jess and River, that's two. We move them into.
Well, other way, there's basically everyone. There's three, or else to be four groups of four.
Okay, nobody's in two group of two, right?
No.
Okay, then they'll.
And it looks like they've all accepted.
Okay.
I don't see any little clear dot. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. That's one of two. Becky Hardy and Sasha. Why did that happen?
Well, you know, they've already
started.
Oh, but see, we're okay. That's good, because Jess and River are in that, and yeah. We don't have to be in one.
No.
Oh, are we in it?
No, I think that's Ben, because he.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Maybe it's a little late to drag somebody into another group now.
Yeah,
I think
it's hard. I mean, you have to be really fast, I guess, or. Give more time.
Yeah.
Okay. So, start at 8:40.
Okay, you're going to have to give them close to 10 minutes. Except I wish those two weren't written by themselves. Let's go get ourselves set up.